This is Nick Ferrari with a look back at my week on breakfast here on LBC. To bury the police, but to praise them. It couldn't get much worse in this case. A murder, a farcically botched inquiry by a police force that was subsequently seen to and accepted by the top cop of the time to be racist, indeed institutionally racist. Two failed prosecutions, a public inquiry already, just two of the possibly six killers convicted. Now, 21 years on, the Home Secretary orders a new public inquiry, as a report says that the Met suppressed evidence of corruption in the original investigation into the death of Stephen Lawrence down in Eltham. And it would appear that necessary paperwork has been lost, or we can even report the claim that it's been shredded. Man alive, that is about as ugly as it can get, I agree. But pause and think of all the young men and women and middle-aged men and women who actually do the job. And God forbid you're in a post office later today, whether it's in this city or anywhere else in the land, and somebody or some blokes come in with balaclavas and shotguns and goodness knows what else. Who are you going to want to see come in storming over the bluff just as quickly as they can get there? That's right, it's the police, isn't it? God forbid you're in any form of street crime. Who do you want to see turn up in the car and go after the bad guy or bad guys or bad women? That's right, it's the police. Perhaps you'll go for a drink, it's a Friday night, you'll go into a busy town or city centre somewhere in the country, minding your own business with your friends or your girlfriends or your boyfriends, whatever it might be, it all kicks off. How quickly can the police... Can you get here, please, quickly? That is the reality of the police, isn't it? So while I'm not seeking to minimise for a moment what has gone on here, it is... As one newspaper says, farcical. I think it's worse than that. It's probably criminal. And of course it needs to be investigated. What we must not lose sight of is, tragic as it was, the murder of Stephen Lawrence and what subsequently ensued was just one item, the level of work the police do. And every day they're out there, and every night they're out there, every day of every week, of every month, of every year, they're on the front foot and they're doing the sort of stuff that I know I'm not brave enough. And by the way, they're not doing it for a lot of money either. So I'm here to praise the police, but I wonder if you'll agree. Will Riley is founder of the charity Why Me, where victims of crimes meet their perpetrators. He's going to tell his story. Now, we've spoken before, haven't we, Mr. Riley?
We have indeed, Nick.
It's good to have you on again, sir. Would you just remind the listeners of the fairly extraordinary circumstances of your story?
Yes, I was working from home. I went upstairs to get my gym kit, and I found what was obviously a burglar in my house. I didn't want to believe it. I stupidly decided to try to capture him. We fought. It was pretty aggressive. I caught him. I screamed for the police. The police actually came. I bundled them in the back of a police car and then went to hospital. 6 weeks later, let me stand back and give you my view about the police.
Sure.
The police were brilliant.
Right.
You know, it's like going to hospital when you see a doctor, when you see a nurse. They're brilliant. They sorted out my house. They made sure that the house was safe. They talked to my daughter when I was in hospital and she'd come back with the nanny. 2 weeks on, I received a call from what I could only regard as a compassionate police officer to encourage me to meet the offender, which I didn't want to do.
Right.
2 weeks later, I was compassionately encouraged to do so, and I met him. It changed his life. He's 12 years now, clean, free, drugs, alcohol, burglary, everything you imagine right. That he's been doing. And I resolved the issue of the fear of being broken into and having somebody behind the door. I put the key in for that first 6 weeks, I thought someone would be behind that door. So it was a huge result on both sides, for victim and for offender. To such an extent, I set up for charity.
Indeed, the Why Me charity, yep. Mr. Riley. You praise the work of the police. If I can just drill down a little bit more,
sure,
what is it that they did that, if I can use the word, impressed you so much?
Well, they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly what was required, and it was charity. They knew the house had to be made safe. They knew my daughter was coming back from school. They knew my wife was coming back, and they handled all of those stages brilliantly, utterly professionally, with great compassion, because they realised that this is a, you know, they've been in these situations before. It's horrible. Someone breaking your house, it's horrible.
Of course.
They made sure that I got to hospital. They handled all that side. They kept me informed as to what my family was doing back at home. And then moving forward, as I was fortunate enough to be involved in the restorative justice scheme that they were working on at the moment, paid for by the Home Office, I got this compassionate police officer. You don't think of those two together necessarily, but compassionate police officer who encouraged me to do this. And I felt comfortable. I felt that he knew exactly what he was talking about, and he had the emotional intelligence to convey and to help me through this process. Remarkable. And you know, the only touches I had with the police, I found that to be the case. Of course they're bad apples. Of course. We should go through this. We should try and do our damnedest to eradicate. But they are human beings. You know, they work for us, but they're human beings.
If you had to endure my fairly lengthy preamble then, broadly speaking, Mr. Riley, you kind of fine for me here.
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was relatively balanced. But yes, absolutely. In the end, you know, you go abroad and you start talking about the National Health Service, and anybody has experience from abroad of the National Health Service, they say, you people are mad. You have the best health service.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe it. You know, the police force, you people are mad. You know, of course it can be improved, and of course you should do so, and of course you should investigate any wrongdoing in the police force, and of course Hogan Howe should have come on the radio this morning, etc., etc.
Yes, of course.
But let's you know, we're damn lucky to live in this country. We're damn lucky to the services we have to this country, and to knock it is easy prey, is easy stuff, isn't it?
Thank you for that. Will Riley founded the charity Why Me? Why Don't You? Check it out. But do you agree with what I'm saying, and indeed what Mr. Riley is saying, or have you got a very, very different version of the boys and girls in blue? Helen's in Brentwood. Hello, Helen.
Oh, hello, Nick. First time caller.
Oh, yes. Great to have you on board. How long have you been listening?
Oh, about 5 or 6 years.
Great. Wow, that's taken you a while.
Just a couple of points. I don't understand why we have a black police association. And there's no white police association.
Well, they can form one if they want one, but they don't want
one. Yes, of course they can.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, you know, it should just be one thing.
Okay. You may be right, but sort of coming back to the main point, do you think the police, by and large, do a good job?
Yes, I do.
So when you see them going through...
The first people you turn to when you need help.
Yes.
And they go into very, very dangerous situations at times.
Yes.
Unarmed.
Oh, yes.
And they do all sorts of things, you know... Out of the realm of duty.
Yes, indeed.
And I've got nothing but praise for them. And you won't get a few bad apples.
Last time you came into contact with a police officer, how was it for you?
Very good, very good.
Do you mind if I ask what it was? You don't have to tell me, obviously.
Oh, it was a long time ago, actually.
But they worked well.
It was that someone had dumped a car outside my house. And they were very good. They got onto it straight away.
Thank you for that. Helen, Sebastian in Beckenham, the last time you saw or came across a police officer, how was it for you?
I've had generally a very good experiences. A little while ago, I stopped a guy from hitting his wife.
Mm.
And I've intervened a few times where I found miscarriage of justice.
Mm.
Police have normally turned up very quickly, and they've listened. They listen, and I think a lot of people don't realise that. I mean, you know, police are just like us. There's no difference to the guy in uniform or the lady in uniform or to the man and the woman on the street. And as we have to have emotional intelligence and try and feel how other people feel, they've got to do the same. But they've also, I think the hard thing for them is they've got to, if you look at transaction analysis, a form of psychology, they've got to remain in that adult stage the whole time. And then switch between that and the critical parent to be able to keep peace, justice, and stability in difficult times, but also feel how we're feeling. And I think a lot of people don't give the police force the due credit that they need. And whenever I've had contact with them, they've generally said thank you very much, and also appreciated the fact that. I've put myself at risk intervening, especially when I've seen domestic violence in the street.
Sebastian, thank you. I've got to move on to get more involved. Ian in Guildford. Ian, do you want to praise or bury the police?
Good morning, Nick. I'm fully police. I'm a paramedic in London. I've been a paramedic for 20 years. I've got 20 years' experience of working there.
You'll have seen some things.
Alongside the police. What I wanted to kind of just bring up, Nick, in I believe it was October, November 2012, I was working on my own on a response car, and I went to an incident where a lady had been murdered. When I turned up on scene, the police were already on scene. And I was almost on my own for a little while. The police kind of helped me resuscitate this lady. And in the 20 years I've been paramedic, I've never seen the police kind of work so hard as they did on this particular evening.
So when you hear the sort of rough ride they're getting at the moment, what would you say to the listeners about what the police do, Ian?
I think, you know, obviously there's good and bad everywhere, Nick. But, you know, on the whole, I say with 20 years' experience, all I've ever seen is good. And I think, you know, people need to, show the police more respect for what they do.
Ian, thank you. Emails on that in a moment. A lot of emails coming in on that LBC exclusive we broke with the political editor Theo Usherwood in the previous hour, which is the fact you'll have to make £80,000 a year by the year after next to afford a very average-sized rental in London. This comes in from Xenia. I'm trapped in a two-bed flat. I can't afford to move. I don't know what me and my daughter will do. These rent increases are impossible to keep up with. I'm a prisoner in someone else's home and I fear for the future. I work, but I seem to get nowhere. Same subject, this comes in from George. I have just inquired about a mortgage and I've been told that while I can easily afford the mortgage, I cannot afford the £54,000 deposit because I have one satisfied default from 3 years ago. That means I don't qualify for any government help. I find it sickening to my stomach that I could be told that, and at the same time my taxes are used to bail out the banks. I'm currently paying £1,000 a month plus £153 council tax on top of that for a two-bed flat in Romford. I might also add that landlords are now asking for 6 months' rent in advance across the board. The whole thing is out of control. Jenny in Westminster says, it won't be long before the only people living in London are the very poor in social housing and the very rich. Everyone will still expect to have service from shop assistants, emergency services, street cleaners, etc., but there won't be homes for these important people.
This is Nick Ferrari with more to come as I look back at my week on Breakfast. This is LBC. This is Nick Ferrari with a look back at my week on Breakfast here on LBC.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Clegg. I hope you're well today, and Nick, to the other Nick.
Thank you, I am.
My question to you is this. I read it in the Metro on Monday. Boris Johnson has claimed that Muslim children at risk of radicalisation from their parents should be taken into care. Would you like to discuss that?
Are you aware of the report?
I've heard him. I've heard that he's said. I've also, by the way, I've heard that Boris Johnson now is in support of a mansion tax, having sort of poo-pooed it for many, many years. But anyway, there you go. He doesn't half say one thing.
Has
one
he actually said not. He supports your mansion tax?
Well, he doesn't call it a mansion tax, but he calls it extra council tax bans for very high-value properties in London, which is basically the mansion tax. And by the way, it's also precisely the proposal I put to George Osborne and David Cameron a couple of years ago, because it's
but
a fair thing to do. I know,
yeah.
Elizabeth, sorry, I was just asked about it. Sorry, I'll come back,
that's
Elizabeth.
That's my fault,
Elizabeth.
That's my fault, Elizabeth.
Time to think.
Sorry, Elizabeth, I was just, because that, since
my
that
fault.
Is a quite an important
my
issue, it was precisely the proposal that I put that the Conservatives wouldn't accept a couple of years ago. But, back to your point, Elizabeth, I would really need to understand how one would adjudicate when a child is at risk. I think it
schools
would be
local, because he was sitting in that very seat on Monday. Schools, local authorities, schools and churches and mosques and others, because also children of far right families as well. Mm. If they were being inculcated with hateful views about black people or Jewish people.
Yeah, and look, it's incredibly sensitive area, Elizabeth. But at what point does the state, do public authorities basically insert themselves into a family and say you, mum and dad, this family is no longer fit to bring up your son and daughter as you wish. Now, that is a very, very big step to take. That is, you know, that's one of the most extreme measures that the state can take to kind of actually basically break up a
family. So you don't agree with Boris?
No, what I'm saying is, so therefore, the circumstances in which that happens needs to be done where it is absolutely clear that it is indispensable to the safety of a child, which is what, you know,
so it
the
could
whole
be okay.
Well, I am very uneasy about the idea that we start we start intervening when we think that the views of mum and dad somehow should no longer be communicated to a son.
Hang on, so it is a bad idea. It seems to be going both ways, Simpson. It's probably my fault. I'm sorry. I haven't had a lot of sleep. Is it a bad idea?
You should sleep more.
I should indeed.
Because what I've said is pretty straightforward.
So if you're going to intervene...
No, I think it is a very, very difficult idea.
It's a bad idea.
Well, if I can just choose my own words for 1 second, I think it is an extremely difficult idea to implement for anyone to decide at what point the views, because that's what this is. This is safeguarding of children, Elizabeth. The point at which authorities normally intervene to remove a child from their own home is when they feel there is a threat to their health, to their well-being, or to their life. Now, this is something saying quite different. Saying if you don't like the views of somebody of mum or dad, we are going to intervene to stop those views being communicated to their sons or their daughters. I'm very uneasy about that, indeed.
Okay, so in certain instances,
I have not yet come across an instance where it would be easy for any government or any local authority or any child protection officer to say because we don't like your views, we're now going to break up your family.
Never.
Well, I haven't come across...
Okay.
If you can tell me how on earth you could legislate for a way in which we wouldn't then be spending hour after hour on these programmes in future saying, well, hang on a minute, why is the state intervening there? Because they don't like my views about immigration or they don't like my views about religion.
Yeah.
Well, it's a I don't...
If I was informed by a school or a mosque that we had another Michael Adabavali on the way, I could see the merits.
Well, then, of course, you need to combat extremism and extreme views.
He was one of the killers of Lee
but Reed. But what Boris Johnson seems to be implying is that you basically break up families because you don't like the views that have been communicated within the home.
Right.
And as an old-fashioned liberal, don't be surprised that I think that is a pretty slippery slope.
Elizabeth, thank you. I need to get an email question. Pauline in Caterham, do you agree with Vince Cable? Teachers know nothing about working for a living. This is a little clip of a speech that Dr. Cable gave.
The underlying problem is, of course, that most teachers, particularly in the secondary sector, are graduates. You know, they know how universities work. They know what you have to do to get an A-level. They know about UCAS forms. They know absolutely nothing about the world of work.
Applause there at a meeting with UK manufacturers. Nick Clegg.
Well, I don't think... I know for a fact that Vince is a huge admirer of the extraordinary work that our teachers do day in, day out. It was absolutely not his intention to cause offence. Teachers are the lifeblood of society. In fact, we've just talked about the importance of adults, both in and outside the home, setting the right kind of example for our children. And
he say it then?
Well, I think he was having a wider discussion, which, by the way, in my experience, my friends and people I know who are in teaching actually agree with the wider point he was actually making, which was that we need to improve the careers advice and guidance that is given to kids in school, because frankly, in many schools, it's not yet good enough. And that's why I announced, for instance, last week that we're going to be issuing shortly guidance to schools about how to provide better careers advice and guidance, including, which is very relevant to the discussion Vince was having with that particular audience, including a new responsibility on schools to work with local employers and local businesses in order to give kids more of an opportunity to...
Say, though, is it? They know absolutely nothing about the world of work. It's hardly surprising the NUT, National Union of Teachers, describe his comments as, quotes, crass. They are crass, aren't they?
Well, if you take that sentence out of context and don't explain the context as I've done, of course I understand that teachers may be offended by that, but I also know that Vince did not intend to offend teachers. He was making a point about how we need to give youngsters, and indeed teachers, more support, as we will be doing shortly because of the announcement I made last week, support in making the decisions about what careers they might take up later.
Yeah, but anybody, if I was to say to you, and I wouldn't, you know absolutely nothing about the world of politics, or you would say to me, I would know absolutely nothing about the world.
You probably had said that about me on occasion.
I write occasionally in the Sunday Express about the world of broadcasting. You know what the spirit is behind that. It's offensive, isn't it, Mr. Craig?
As I say, I don't think, I know that Vince would not have wanted to cause offence. I am a massive, self-evidently a massive admirer of what teachers do day in, day out for millions of...
Are you a massive admirer of Mr. Cable, Dr. Cable?
Well, I agree with the context in which that discussion was held, as I understand it, which is how do we make sure that children get better information, better support, better guidance, so they can decide for themselves what they want to do later in life. Well, at the moment, frankly, the provision of careers advice and guidance across our schools, and teachers would agree with this, is too patchy. We're going to improve that in the way that I announced last week.
When things like this happen, as the leader, do you ring these blokes up and say, have you gone bloody bonkers?
I treat I treat adults as adults, and sometimes, and I've no doubt done it myself, sometimes you say something which you either wish you hadn't quite used those words, or they've been taken out of context, and you've just got to explain yourself, as I'm sure Vince will, and I know, when he does, that he will confirm that he didn't mean to, you know, cause any offence towards teachers whatsoever. Thomas in Wigan.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Clegg.
Hello.
What do you mean by cabinet collective responsibility? What does it mean to you, and do you think that you've been good partners in the coalition?
I think it's been remarkable. I think it's been a remarkable display of collective decision making by two parties that are clearly different and don't agree on everything.
For instance, did you clear the upcoming debate with Nigel Farage? Did you clear that with your government partners?
Well, of course not. It's not a government decision. It's got nothing to do with the Conservatives or the government.
You see, this is all the time you seem to be undermining, and I ought to tell you I'm...
No, sorry, Thomas. It's a completely ludicrous suggestion that I, as leader of the Liberal Democrats, cannot decide who I debate with as leader of the Liberal Democrats. It's got nothing to do with the government, it's got nothing to do with cabinet discussion. As it happens, myself and my coalition partners, the Conservatives, we don't see eye to eye on Europe, but that doesn't mean that we don't take decisions day in, day out, collectively, for the benefit of the country. David Cameron, myself, Danny Alexander and George Osborne spent hours yesterday, for instance, preparing the forthcoming budget together. But there are decisions that David Cameron takes that I would never dream of suggesting that he needs to talk to me about first, because he has every right to act as a leader of a party, as I do as well.
One thing that I think will be made clear at the next election, whichever party wins, and if it, either the Conservatives or the Labour, which, and I hope it's Labour, if they don't have an overall majority, I don't think either party would go into coalition with you because of the way you've behaved.
Well, I couldn't disagree more strongly with you. I would warn you against the, how can I put it politely, the hubris of somehow suggesting that the two other parties, if they don't get a majority from the British people, can nonetheless somehow dictate to the rest of the country how the country will be governed. In a democracy, if you don't secure a majority for yourself in Parliament, you don't have the right to simply decide that you're going to govern the country nonetheless. And I think, you know, I think we were faced as a country back in 2010 with an unprecedented situation. Firstly, an economic crisis caused largely by the party you support, the Labour Party, and secondly, an inconclusive outcome of the general election. What we did was novel, clearly not welcome to you, but I think was nonetheless absolutely indispensable in putting the country back on the straight and narrow, pulling the country back from the economic brink, which is where Labour had left it. And we're now finally seeing that the plan we started there as a coalition of rescuing, repairing and reforming the British economy is working.
Is it fair to say, Mr. Clegg, that the nation seems to be falling more in love with the idea of a coalition? A newspaper this week published that 34% of people believe, that's a third effectively, Britain is better off with a coalition government than if the Tories had won or Labour had won at the last general election. And apparently you're telling your Lib Dem colleagues to prepare for another 5 years in power in another form of coalition.
I think, look, my own view, people will agree or disagree. Thomas, who just rang, clearly is one of those people who strongly disagrees. But look, my own view is that one of the worst things for this country after the elections, the general election next year, would be a Conservative-only or a Labour-only government.
This is Nick Ferrari. More highlights of my week on breakfast after the news. This is LBC. This is Nick Ferrari with a look back at my week on breakfast here on LBC.
Anyway, getting on to bus passes.
Okay, come on, please.
I am retired.
Yes.
Worked very hard, well past retirement age.
Yes.
And I want to know why you are thinking of getting rid of bus passes.
We're not. Who says that? We're not.
Well, there was a... it's been in the papers. There was a programme on LBC yesterday devoted to it.
Let me tell you, you're talking to the guy who brought in the 24-hour bus pass for people over 60 in this city. I fought for that. I fought to retain it, and we are going to retain it.
As long as
I'm mayor, Trinder, you will never have anything to fear for your bus pass. I absolutely guarantee that.
Stay on the line, Trinder. The local government association has reported support for the concessionary fare scheme, has been reduced by over a third since 2010. Under the scheme, councils have to provide free off-peak travel for those aged over 62 or disabled. Trinder, that might apply for you. And now elderly and disabled passengers could lose some of those services because of cuts in funding. But
whatever the local government association is saying does not apply to London, Trinder, where we
I'll
have...
I'll hold you to that
well, you can hold me to it. You people have held me to it for 6 or 7 years so far, and
we have
delivered.
Just to tell you the reason why, there are many reasons. For me personally, I like to go... Now, having worked 7 days a week for many, many years, I like now, I'm retired, to go to the West End, which I have to go on a tube, buses, and
Beautiful.
Go to the art galleries. And I certainly couldn't do it if I didn't have my bus pass.
Don't worry, Trinda, you're not going to lose your bus pass. There are some parties, naming no names, and the Liberal Democrats might be one of them, that are hostile to the bus pass. But as long as you've got a Conservative mayor in City Hall, it's going to be there. Uh-huh. We go to John in Brentwood.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, sir.
Just a very simple question. If you ever did become PM, would you give the people a vote on Europe?
Yes.
Okay.
Happy, John.
That's a very nice answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good one.
Let me do some email questions that are coming now, if I might, actually. Anthony in Bexley says, is it true you don't work at City Hall on Fridays?
No, I often work at City Hall. I work the whole time, and I'm...
I'll read on. Ken Livingstone said on LBC on the weekend, you never go to work. You always work from, quote, work from home on Fridays. You're never at City Hall.
Well...
Is Ken Livingstone, apparently he said that on LBC on Saturday, is that right?
Well, he certainly didn't make much of an effort to go into City Hall on Fridays.
Never mind,
for instance, on this Friday, I made, what did I do? I went to, I gave a speech, and I then had the great joy, Nick, of last Friday. I'll tell you what I did last Friday. I took the European Commissioner for the Regions and Structural Funds to...
task?
No. To the cable car.
Oh, no. Why did you do that?
I took him to the cable car.
Well, you've got to get some
poor soul on there. I tell you why I took him to the cable car. Because... I am thrilled to say that...
Well,
you
knew you'd have space to talk confidentially.
On the contrary, last week...
carriage to yourself.
Over half term, we have had a record number of visitors on that cable car. 47,000, the highest number since I was here.
The week ending the 15th of February...
It is going absolutely...
Was the worst week ever.
Wait. Okay, you... I cannot believe you're continuing to attack this thing. I took... that's what I was doing.
7,000
that was what I was doing. On Friday, let me tell you what Alistair Wood, senior vice president of development for the AEG Europe, the guys who run the O2, said. The Emirates airline has had an extremely positive impact on O2 business in the Greenwich Peninsula as a whole.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm not paying my city council taxes
to
help the O2.
No, you're not paying it because it's the cable car, unlike any other form of transport infrastructure, as you well know.
Sir Peter Hendy,
it's already covering its revenue.
This is
costs.
Sir Peter Hendy with me. Last month. That cable car. It's a white elephant, isn't it?
Well, you try that one with Boris.
It's a white elephant, isn't it?
You try that one with Boris.
I have. It is a white elephant.
It's for regeneration. The story that we've only got 4 regular passengers isn't true.
Well, we've been there down there. We've found 3.
Oh, for heaven's sake. There are people using it every day.
Yeah, 4 people.
Well... You,
it's a white elephant.
You try that line with him. As far as we're concerned, it's part of the transport system. We'll run it as part of the transport system in an area of London which needs economic development.
And what the Chinese, for instance, the ABP developers who are bringing in £6 billion worth into the Royal Docks say. They said that it was
7,000 people.
Part of their
week of the 15th
decision.
Of February.
The cable car represents modern transport. 7,000. We very much like the cable car. It's the only one of its kind.
It can take 5,000 an hour.
And the Chinese love it. And 7, actually, 000. When I took the commissioner...
So we made it for the Chinese now, did we?
No, we made it, as Peter Hendy rightly just said, if you're listening to your own interview, which you conducted with him, Nick, he said that it was there for regeneration benefits.
With Peter Hendy, but anyway, we've flanneled our way through his expression,
And he is dead right. And actually, it was incredible to go up and see what's happening.
Incredible that it moved. Normally it doesn't move.
It works. I don't know why you're so negative. I mean,
well, because I wanted to do the show on there, and you won't let us. When can we go on it?
Yeah, any time.
Oh, hello. Steady now. I think you got the note of another call.
Come on.
You got a note about Sandra, if not
Sandra in Hartley.
Yep, absolutely.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Sandra.
Today is the 71st anniversary of the Bethnal Green Tube Shelter disaster.
Right,
the
yes.
The worst civilian disaster of World War II, which I know you know about.
Yes.
Our charity has raised almost £400,000 so far, and we've built two-thirds of a memorial to honour everyone that's involved in it. We now need just £75,000 in order to finish it.
Right. Brilliant.
However, we've been led to believe that if we could just raise £25,000 fairly quickly, there might be two other funders that would be prepared to donate the rest.
Right.
So that we can finish it this year. Now, I read last week you pledged to pay for the memorial service for the 7/7 bombings for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
We held our memorial service yesterday, and I personally paid £80 out of my own pocket to ensure that all the elderly people that have travelled all over the country had something to eat and drink.
For the Bethnal Green Memorial Service.
Absolutely. We've never had a penny for you from this for this disaster, and it's right here on your patch in London.
Well, Sandra,
surely you can find something, please.
Okay, well, listen, I'm very grateful. Have we met, by the way?
We have. You came to help us with an arts auction at Fish Island.
Last oh, yes, that's right. I thought I'd helped you with some money raising, because that's what I pledged to do. I would love to help more. I'm glad you're still so close. Are you closer now than you were when I came? Are you?
Absolutely.
Up at 400,000. That sounds fantastic. I mean, what just for benefit of listeners, what you're proposing is an absolutely amazing sculpture, kind of upside down staircase above Bethnal Green Tube Station to commemorate this appalling disaster in the war when people were panicked by a bomb, I think it was, or reports of a bomb.
They weren't panicked, and it wasn't a bomb, but they thought it was a new bomb, yes.
They thought it was, as far as I can remember, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was an absolutely tragic disaster, which then actually caused a lot of community tensions, as I remember.
Yeah.
And I do think it's a good idea that it should be commemorated. That's why I have supported you in the past, Sandra. If we can find some cash, or you know, it sounds as though you're very close and you're bargaining very hard with me. You're trying to make it sound like you just only need another 25,000. If that really would make a difference, then let me see what we can do to help. And I'm not making any promises on air because that would be unwise. But I'm certainly, as you know, very sympathetic to your cause.
Well, if we're actually doing a charity collection at Bethnal Green Station on Friday. So as you're in the office now on Fridays, if you want to come along and look at that memorial and see all
the... You want me to get out of the office and come to... You want me to get out of the office and Bethnal Green Station?
Just for 10 minutes and come and see all the lovely flowers and wreaths that were put there yesterday and right. You can see what it looks like and then, you know, come along with a cheque for 20,000 and we'd be really pleased.
Well, I will... Check for 25, what, from the taxpayer? Okay. I can't quite do that, but I will certainly look very sympathetically at what you
we'll
say,
we'll make
Sandra.
Sure that all your details get across to the Mayor's people, Sandra. Thank you.
Can we go to Paul in Hendon, please?
Good morning. How are you, Mr. Barrage?
I'm very well, Paul.
Right. You know, like you, making money from public, like when you had this strike on the tubes, why didn't you give people like myself congestion charge, parking for free?
Yeah,
that's one of them. And the second one, we have so many beautiful parks in this country. People like myself cannot go there because vultures like yourself, like the parking wardens, as soon as we park there, we get tickets. What is the parks for? Is it just to glimpse of it or just walk off it?
Well, okay, right. A couple of points on the congestion charge during industrial action, which we've had this idea before. Back in I think it was 2010, loads of people said, why didn't we axe the congestion charge? In the end, the trouble there is you're just going to cause too much traffic.
No, you won't cause congestion. You're not going to cause problem because the problem is the money's going in your pockets. That's what it is. Because if you consider about people like myself, then you'd think yes, they need to get into the place, and how much. People had so much problem to get to work, and how much money did we lose?
Well,
have you ever thought about that instead of putting money in your pocket?
Yeah, obviously, what the money is there to invest in transport, but the reason that's not the reason why the congestion charge is levied on those days. It is because we don't want the problems people are having, which I apologise to you and to everybody, to be made worse by too much traffic in central London taking advantage of a non-congestion charge day. I'm sorry that that's not the answer you want to hear, but that's what we're doing. On parking charges around parks, I am sympathetic to what you say. It depends which park you're talking about. Obviously, many of them are run by the boroughs. But if there's a particular
one of them, every park you have, you got to pay to go into the park. It doesn't matter where it is, you got to pay for the parking.
What, you've got to
pay? And even like, I don't even know why. I don't even know why I pay my road tax for. Because road tax is supposed to use for people like myself to use the road and to park my car, because I'm supporting that. So why would I have to, you know, let the council dictate me to say where I can park and when I can't park?
Well, I think most people would say, Paul, listening to you, that actually the reason for that is that loads of people want to park near the parks because that's they're a lovely place to go, and clearly there's a huge demand for it, and they have to find some way of allocating the space, and that's why you have the institution of parking charges. I understand your frustration, but that is the way it works.
This is Nick Ferrari with more to come as I look back at my week on Breakfast. This is LBC. This is Nick Ferrari with a look back at my week on Breakfast here on LBC.
Paul in Reigate.
Morning, Mayor.
Good morning, sir.
I'm a coach driver. I'm all over London. I've been doing it for years. I've been trying to get a job as a tube train driver. And every time I approach anybody, they always tell me that I have to do so many years as a guard. And
right.
I would like to do it, because I don't go on strike. I work very hard.
Right, okay.
And I just like that kind of money, really.
Okay, Paul, well, I don't...
What is your question? How do you get the job? Is that what you're asking?
He doesn't want to be a guard, he wants to be a driver. Well, let me just tell you, Paul, that but actually the job of train driver over the next... I don't know how old you are, Paul, but over the next 10, 20 years is going to fall away a bit, because we're actually getting driverless trains now on the underground. By 2016, the new Piccadilly line trains will be effectively driver-free. They will be able to convert our tube lines more and more towards automation.
Aslef aren't very happy, Mr. Mayor.
Well,
nobody with any serious knowledge of railway operation would consider doing this. It's rubbish, incredibly stupid, and makes no sense.
Well, Aslef should well, I don't want to deprecate the fine people of Aslef, but you know, if you look at what is done in other countries, look at what's done in other cities around the world. Go to Asian metro systems; they have automatic systems. They run very well, very fast, and they're able to hold costs down. They're very safe as well. There's no reason why we shouldn't move towards that here in London. But I don't want to discourage Paul.
Mm.
He wants a career in LU and in London Underground, and he's right, because what we're doing is putting more investment into our tube system. We're expanding the network. We're putting more trains on. We're running 24 hours a day. It's a fantastic career. Whatever you end up doing, Paul, in London Underground, you will have, in my view, in great prospects. Whether or not you're actually sitting at the wheel, or sitting, you don't have a wheel, sitting at the controls of a tube train, I don't think really matters. Thanks. And let's go to Samuel in Kensington. Samuel, are you there?
Yes, hi, Boris. Nice to speak to you, Mayor. Mr.
Yes,
Mayor,
sir.
I've been trying to get through to you for a few months now. I found it quite difficult, but I'm happy to get through to you now.
Fantastic.
It's regarding the airport expansion plans.
Yeah.
I'm in support of your estuary plan. Very, very in support of it. I like
Good.
The idea.
It's the right way forward.
Yes, but I'm not in support of closing Heathrow. I think there's too much investment in Heathrow.
Yep.
We've just built so many sort of new infrastructure in Heathrow. There's so much investment around Heathrow in terms of specialist companies that service airport.
Yeah.
There's a lot of investment in terms of mortgages. People have bought houses there. People's lives are actually based in Heathrow. Heathrow is really the pride of the nation.
Yeah.
I think what we should do is that we should be downsizing Heathrow, because the traffic going into Heathrow at the moment is horrendous. We need to downsize Heathrow so it can run efficiently.
Well, look, Samuel, I would buy that. Sorry, go on.
I also wanted to say that other airports such as London City Airport should be scrapped if the Estuaries airport is going to come into place, because London City, I've flown into London City before, it is terrible, especially in fog, especially in low clouds. It just can't operate.
Well, Samuel, I mean, I'm a taker for what you're saying. I think the difficulty is expanding Heathrow and that would be catastrophic. I happen to think that it would be an amazing sight. You'd liberate an area the size of Kensington and Chelsea. You could build, you could probably house 200,000 people. You know, look at the crisis we've got in London with the cost of housing. You'd have a huge new beautiful area served by, I think, 4 tube stations, Crossrail, the Heathrow Express. We've already got the amazing rail links, which is so unlike other regeneration sites, you know, which are so hard to get going. One of the reasons Battersea was so vacant for so long was because there was no transport there. We had to build extend the Northern Line. That's not the case with Heathrow. You've already got the transport. The whole thing would go gangbusters, I think. But you know, I do accept, and this is a view I know that's shared by, you know, Ray Puddifoot in Hillingdon, whose borough it is, that you could go down to a smaller airport. You could have a sort of a residue smaller airport and still get loads of development at the same time. I think that the estuary would be a complete game changer for this country. You would have the possibility of regeneration of development in huge parts of industrial wasteland in East London that would solve our housing crisis or help to solve our housing crisis and generate a huge hundreds of thousands of jobs, I think about 500,000 jobs. And it would be something that I think would lengthen this country's lead as the commercial economic capital of Europe. And you know, I think as I never, you know, bore myself rigid saying it, we should go for it.
Samuel, emails if I can. Thank you. Can I email if I may? Email if I may. This comes from Dan in Bexley. Why are fewer people using Boris bikes?
Actually, I'm not sure there are fewer people using
Boris. Well, I've got this here. The number
of
people borrowing a bike from the capital cycle hire scheme fell by 10% in January, despite an expansion to the south.
Well, it's jolly cold in January, I expect.
Well, I think these are numbers. Despite expanding into London, the number of hires fell from 500,000 in January 2013 to 498 in January this year.
Well, Dan, I think the reason, I mean, we are expanding the bike hire scheme.
But people aren't using them as much.
They are using, they're using them in huge numbers.
Well, no, but they're using them in less numbers.
I've got to be honest, we did change the pricing. We did change the pricing. In other words, we put the prices up to put it more frankly. I think that might be a factor. But I passionately believe in the scheme. It's going to be expanded. Actually, what we're going to do, we're not just going to expand it, but one of the things that we're going to do, which may help to...
How much did you put the charges up by?
Pass. You always ask me these complicated questions.
Well,
about
the mayor. You did introduce... Well, how much does it cost to hire a Boris?
It's still... I'll tell you this. It's still free for the first half hour.
I appreciate that.
It's free
that.
To you. Free. It's still free.
Yeah, okay. But what is the charge should you go over the half hour, and what is the charge each subsequent hour?
Can someone inform Mr. Ferrari of the charges? Well,
I'd like the mayor to inform
I'm telling you it's free for the first half hour. After that, it's positively nugatory, but it is still free.
You don't
for the
know
first
how
half
much it
hour.
Is, do you?
It goes up in very small increments, and it's eminently affordable. Okay. But we did put it up.
Why did Barclays come away from it, sponsoring it?
Well, I think that they... I'm very grateful to Barclays because they stumped up £25 million for the support of the scheme. I suspect that there was a change of regime at the top of Barclays, and they generally did look
to... Have you got a new sponsor?
All their sponsorship outgoings, and they thought they could... They wanted to rationalise. We are in discussions with loads of people, and as you can
Who
imagine...
Who might the new sponsor be?
Well, it might be LBC.
No, it's not. Tell me about another media company. Tell me about another media company you're close to signing.
LBC.
Look out the window if we had one. What would you see if you looked out of the window?
The Odeon Leicester
Square. No, above that. What would you see?
Part of Virgin, is it?
No, you'd see the sky, wouldn't you?
The sky.
Now, how close are you to doing the deal with Sky?
As far as I know, nowhere near, but I mean, I'll be happy to...
Why are you colouring? Why are you going red? Are we on to something?
I'm habitually...
So Sky is in pole position to be the new sponsor?
I didn't say that, honestly. I don't know where you're getting your information from.
Oh, you don't know?
No, I don't. Okay. No. I think you might actually be barking up the wrong tree. I'll go and make inquiries after.
Okay.
We have some very, very fantastic people handling...
If I keep a bike up to 1 hour and 30 minutes, will it cost me £4, £5, or £6?
Give me the bit of paper, you stick
of No, the idea is that I have the bits of... All right, well, you read it off there. You clearly don't know. The answer was
£4. It'll cost you £4.
If you'd like to read into the microphone,
sorry. It will cost you for up to an hour, 30 minutes. So 90 minutes of solid, luxurious use of these amply padded, beautiful books. burly, blue, banker-fronted bicycles.
Currently
£4 an hour, up to £2.
Yeah,
up
we don't
to
need to read
hours,
it all
£6.
Out now that we've saved your skin on this. We have time for another call, Mr.
Come on, we got Bilal. Bilal in St. John's Wood, please.
Bilal, go ahead.
Bilal?
Hi, good morning, Nick. Good morning, Boris.
Good morning, sir.
Boris, I'd like to ask about where do you get your evidence from that today in the UK, Islamic or Muslim families actually turn their children into mass murderers and bombers,
well,
or as you may have worded it. Can you define to the general British public what Islamic or Muslim actually means?
Well, I think what I referred to in the piece this morning was to extremist Islamic radicalisation. And I think people are basically familiar with what that involves. I think it's a pretty sort of bleak, nihilistic view of the world. You could hear it in some of the things that the killers of Drummer Lee Rigby were saying. And patently, it's a sort of virus that infects people, and it's very, very tragic when it happens. And there seems to be some evidence, Bilal, talking to people who are responsible for keeping us all safe, they are a bit concerned that there may be a number of families where radicalization is actually going on within the family, either from the parents or from the step-parents or whatever. And the question that in their mind is, and in the mind of the social services, who obviously are doing a very, very good job in trying to help them, the mind is, what does the safeguarding law that applies to these circumstances allow them to do?
I'm Nick Ferrari. You've been listening to the highlights of my week at breakfast on LBC. I'm back on Monday leading Britain's conversation with the big breaking stories of the day, along with regular travel updates. Have a great weekend and stay safe. At 10 this morning, it's Ken Livingstone and David Mellor. But up next, Andrew Castle with Weekend Breakfast. This is LBC.